everyone. This is James from the Controllers and Podcast, brought to you by Octopart. I am here with my co-host, Joseph Passmore. And today we have a very exciting guest for you. It's Stuart Miller, CEO of the National Robotarium over in Scotland. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It's great to have you here.
It's a pleasure to be here, James.
So just before we get started, I kind of just want you to go over a little bit of what the organization is, what its goals are. I know you do some really exciting stuff there.
Yeah, so we've been established now for just about 18 months, so we're fairly new. But we were set up to meet the needs of the robotics and robotics and AI marketplace here in the UK. And those take a few different forms. So everything from supporting existing businesses that are looking to adopt and use robotics in the future, to helping new startup businesses that are developing new robotic solutions and wanting to get those to market, to promoting and assisting with research projects. So we look at the next wave of robotics, and also to reach out to the community at large in the UK to help people think about robotics as a career choice, but also to help them understand robotics overall, so that they can, you know, as robotics comes into their lives over the coming years, they do that in an informed way. And ultimately, we try and blend all of those things together so that we see the benefits cross-cutting from one to the other, which is where the real exciting opportunities arise, when we're able to connect a company with a problem to a startup with a solution, for example.
That's great. I think that's really important work. It's one of those things that, as we progress, becomes unavoidable, dealing with robotics in some capacity in your professional life. We've had some guests on the show that start from early learning with robotics to teach really children so that they're used to and accustomed to it as they go through school, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's really important. I think if you see a future where robotics and robots and humans are working side by side in all kinds of different ways at home, in the workplace, when we're socializing, then we're going to need a generation of people who are comfortable with that and understand it properly, and can operate in that economy, can make the most of it for themselves, but also can make the most of it for everyone else. So getting everyone tuned into that as early as we can, and helping them to understand where the opportunities lie, is really, really one of the main aims of what we do.
Great.
What role do you see robotics and automation playing in the future of the UK?
I think it's massive, not just for the UK, but globally. I think I took this role on just over 2 years ago, and one of my motivations for taking it on was, as a lifelong engineer and someone who's been interested in technology all that time, I could see that robotics was coming to a point where it was going to be really meaningful now. So the technology was maturing, the capability was getting to the point where it was going to be really useful. And that's partly because of the underlying technology in terms of enough computing power and you know, having batteries that are powerful enough and last long enough, but also the intersection of robotics and AI, bringing much more autonomous robotics, much more capable robotics, I could see was going to lead over the next decade to a world where, as I said before, we're all going to have robots in our lives, one way or the other, whether we use them at home to clean the floors, clean the windows, cut the grass, take the dog for a walk, empty the dishwasher, whatever it is that we don't like doing right now. Or we're utilizing them in the workplace to make our businesses more effective and efficient and more competitive. They are going to be part of our lives going forward. And I firmly believe that that's the path that we're going down. So I think it's a really, really important technology. And I think it's one that we will all embrace over the coming years.
Do you think there's sort of a general misconception from a lot of people of what a robot actually is and how you define a robot?
Yeah, I think probably most people haven't really thought too much about it. And if they were asked, it would be a humanoid mechatron. Mm-hmm. It would be something like that. Because that's what they've been fed through science fiction and films and you know, it's that sci-fi view of robotics. And that actually, ironically, is actually the one of the really exciting areas of robotics right now. You know, there are companies all around the world developing humanoid robots, not least of which Tesla. But, you know, a quick Google search will find at least 20 of them in countries all dotted all around the world, all at different stages of development. But I think there is still work to be done to help everyone understand those other types of robots that are going to be in their lives. Everything from autonomous vehicles to autonomous drones, but also just simple things like, you know, getting your Deliveroo delivered in the future and by robot and not by someone on a bike. All of that is coming. And I think the real challenge, well, not challenge, an equal measure challenge and opportunity is for everyone to make sense of that and understand how, you know, how their lives are going to change. But yeah, I think most people would just think it was a humanoid robot, I think. And I think those of us who are involved in robotics know there's an awful lot more to it than that. And that's part of the education process.
I saw that your stunning campus is built on Heriot Watt University's Edinburgh campus.
Yeah.
Are you working in partnership with the university?
Yes, we are. More than in partnership, we're an integrated part of the university. But we're a slightly complicated organisation. So the funding to establish the building and equip it with the robotics that we currently have and all, you know, all the office furniture, etc., that came through a government initiative that started 5 or 6 years ago, which is known as a city deal. So it was looking at turning Edinburgh and its surrounding areas into an area that was focused on data-driven innovation. So there are similar centres to the National Robotarium dotted around Edinburgh, ones focusing on medicine, others on agriculture, etc. So there's 6 in total. But we are basically delivered through Heriot Watt University. We're an integrated part of that. Our 2 sponsoring universities are the University of Edinburgh and Heriot Watt University. So we work really closely with their academics and their research groups. But because we're the National Robotarium for the UK, we also reach out to all other universities across the whole of the UK and have a network of connections into those that are active in robotics. So it's quite an interesting aspect to my job, which is working both locally and nationally at the same time, because inevitably, wherever we were located in the UK, and I'm sure this is the case for any other innovation centres dotted around the world even, you tend to get drawn into the local ecosystem quite easily. But at the same time, we have a brief to try and have an impact right across the whole of the UK.
It's really exciting. So I know you have a couple of different types of labs that specialize in different areas. Maybe we can go through some of those, but starting, what are the robotics and autonomous systems labs and what are they focusing on?
So exactly what it says on the tin. In the main, the work going on in there is looking at autonomous systems, sensing their own environment, making their own decisions and carrying out tasks in that environment. That includes everything from using quadrupeds to wheel to tract to drones. We've got an autonomous all-terrain vehicle for looking at applications in agriculture and forestry, which is quite big here in Scotland. We've got an autonomous surface vehicle for going out into the North Sea and looking at wind turbine infrastructure underwater using submarine robots. We have drone capability. We've also got a number of different quadruped types. We're just about to have our first biped arrive. And we've got a number of tracked and wheeled vehicles as well. And really the reason we have all of these and all the other robots that we have is to make it easy for people to access them. So if an organization is looking at, for example, deploying a wheeled robot in their business, but they're not quite sure where to start or how to try out their particular application, then rather than having to find the money to buy one, train their staff up, do all the project in-house, then we give them a real kickstart by giving them access. Hopefully we've got in stock access to the kinds of platforms where they can at least start to experiment. And alongside that, the team of engineers that we have here, we've got 17 engineers on the staff, can work with them to make that journey easier and the learning curve less steep in terms of getting involved in robotics. And that's a big chunk of what we do, which is to de-risk and accelerate the adoption of robotics. But to go back to your question, the Autonomous Systems Lab is very much around that. We also co-locate in there cobots. So we have a number of different cobot arms, again, for exactly the same reason, to allow businesses to rapidly assess the application of cobot robots into their manufacturing processes or their packing processes or whatever it is that they're looking at. So, as I say, a big part of what we do is have on tap and have already invested in the hardware as well as the team of engineers with the expertise to help get these projects off the ground and running quickly.
That's awesome.
So the importance in robotics education when working with these businesses is both familiarity, so to encourage people to adopt, and safety. Could you talk a little bit more about the safety?
Yeah, so you're right. It starts with helping them understand robotics from the perspective of their business. So we listen very carefully to companies about what their problems are before we really start talking about whether robotics is the right answer. But assuming that robotics is the right answer, then, as I've said before, we try and help them rapidly prototype and get their hands dirty with robotics so that they go up that learning curve really quickly. And in amongst that, there's safety, but there's also other elements that we try and help them to understand. So everything from realizing what's involved with maintaining and operating a robot for a long period of time to do with, for example, the stocks of batteries you might want to have or whether you need to have docking stations, very simple things like that, all the way through to thinking about the impact on the rest of your workforce and how the robots work safely in amongst that mix of humans and robotics side by side, to simple things like cybersecurity. I say it's simple, it's not simple in reality, but it's a simple thing to recognize. And it's quite surprising how few companies, when they start talking about robotics, really understand that it's not just about, you know, the thing with four wheels that's going to do the job that they want autonomously. It actually involves an awful lot more infrastructure. But the good news is that as they understand that, it still doesn't put them off the adoption. It actually, I think, in a lot of cases, gives them confidence that what they're buying is, or what they're creating, is a robust solution that's not going to, you know, come into operation and after 2 weeks they put it in the corner and switch it off because they haven't really thought it through.
And then in regards to the other labs that you have operating, the human-robot interaction labs, what are they looking at exactly in that relationship?
Oh, it's a fascinating area. So again, exactly what it says on the tin, looking at that relationship between humans and robots, everything from the psychology and the ethics through to the practicalities of the importance of gesturing, the importance of natural language, the uncanny valley and whether people are accepting of robots. But in the main, the work that's going on there is in the research domain more than in the adoption domain. There is some adoption, but it's predominantly research. And that research is very much around healthcare and social care. So the use of robotics for all kinds of things in terms of replicating the symptoms of Parkinson's disease in robots in order to be able to come up with better diagnostic tools, through to physiotherapy tools using live data feeds to help physiotherapists adjust and tailor their treatments for the patients, therefore getting patients out of physiotherapy and back into normal life sooner rather than later, through to what is a really fascinating area, which is around social care, particularly for an elderly population and people who maybe are isolated and dependent on living at home, where they're today maybe dependent on home visits once or twice a day to make sure that they're secure and safe and fed. Now, in the future, looking at people like that living alongside their own robot, giving them 24-hour, 7-day-a-week protection and support. And what does that robot look like? And you know, how many systems need to be combined into one solution? Or is it something that maybe has some IoT sensors in the home coupled with the robot? All those things are being explored right now.
That's really exciting. I think that's all stuff that people don't even take into account with robotics. There's that a whole side of it that you guys are really looking so deep into.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is important to get that right, because the last thing that robotics as a general purpose, general use technology needs is for people to think that it's not doing the job that they want, or is unreliable, or is unsafe, because that will set it back. And I think the benefits that will come from the adoption and use of robotics, particularly in things like healthcare and social care and education and all the things that we as a civilization want to get right, the benefits are there from robotics if we get it right. And it'd be a real shame if we trip at the first hurdle by putting things out there that don't work properly or haven't been properly thought through. So that basic research that's going on is really important. And how that then blends through into the adoption by the companies and by the people who want to actually use these technologies is a big part of what we try and do. Like I said right at the start, those connections between those areas, I think, is where the magic happens.
Altium 365 lets you hold the fastest design reviews ever. Share your designs from anywhere and with anyone with a single click. It's easy. Leave a comment tagging your teammate and they'll instantly receive an email with a link to the design. Anyone you invite can open the design using a web browser. Using the browser interface, you're able to comment, mark up, cross-probe, inspect, and more. Comments are attached directly to the project, making them viewable within Altium Designer, as well as through the browser interface. Give it a try and get started with Altium 365 today.
And is that mainly engineers working in that section, or is there a range of disciplines?
There's a range of disciplines. So you mentioned before our relationship with Harry Watt University. We're very much linked into the business school and also to the School of Social Sciences, bringing that kind of expertise into the mix as well. And the team here is not just engineers. We've got project managers making sure that we deliver the projects with our customers on time and to cost and quality. But we've also got a team of business development, people who are looking to work very closely with the companies to really understand what it is they're trying to achieve. I'm a great believer that it's important to understand the underlying business need rather than just responding to the request. You know, I'd like a robot to do X. Well, why do you need a robot to do X? What brought you to that conclusion? And what was the underlying problem? Because it could be that the robot's not really going to give you what you want. On the other hand, there might be a better robot solution than the one you presupposed was the right answer. So I think that's where we add an awful lot of value, just helping everyone take one step back and properly understand what the problem is.
And then I know there's one more lab type, which is a precision laser applications lab, which again sounds like it is what it says on the tin. But what exactly does that area focus on?
So precision lasers. So a number of different things. So Harriet Watts University's got a long history in lasers and precision lasers in particular. So that's carrying on in this building, but now we're building in the intersection with robotics. So that happens in two directions. So one of the things about precision lasers is it's almost an art in terms of setting up some of the more complex systems, both in terms of research, but also in terms of manufacturing. So trying to bring robots into the mix to standardize that and make it more repeatable is something that we're looking at. And there's a partnership with a large user of industrial lasers that's involved with that right now. And then the flip side of that is looking at the use of precision lasers to create new components for robotics. And that takes the form of new surface finishes that can be created through etching, but also creating new jointing approaches where two materials that are difficult normally to join together could be joined together using precision lasers, so things like metal and glass, for example.
Fascinating.
Are you able to discuss any of your featured research, or are there any favourite projects of yours?
Yeah, I mean, most of it's out there in the public domain. In fact, it's all out there in the public domain. So all the research that's been done is funded by the UK government. And so it's freely available to everyone. But I think the ones I would highlight are, again, back in that health and social care space. So there's work going on to help people to recover from operations and procedures more quickly. There's a lot of focus on stroke recovery. So one of the startup companies that we have here, it's a bit we haven't talked about yet. So we have a number of resident, what we call resident companies, who are startups, and we support them both virtually and physically. So right now we've got, I think it's 7 companies resident with us, working every day here in the National Robotarium, employing about 50 people across those companies. We've got another 5 or 6 joining us in the next month. So we'll be about a dozen or so very soon. But one of those is focused in on a device to help people recover from stroke, to help them regain the control and the muscles in their hand. And alongside that, there's research work going on in the same area looking at stroke recovery. And another company that's resident with us is called Touch Lab, which is looking at creating the sense of touch for robots, so basically robotic skin. And they've recently publicized the work that they've been doing in the Finnish NHS, equipping a robot with their technology to be hands-on with patients in a way that robots haven't been trusted to do before, because of the sensitivity of the touch and the ability to carry out the tasks that normally would be done by a healthcare professional with many years of training, but isn't really using that skill because it's repetitive arm movements, or it's supporting someone while they're doing some exercises. Mm-hmm. Now you could use the robot to do that while that skilled professional's off doing something more useful. And that's what they were looking at during a 3-month trial.
Fascinating.
This is something that some people have a pretty clear understanding of, and others won't. So I wanted to ask it: how crucial is the partnership with AI to actually achieve autonomy in robotics?
Very. So you can achieve autonomy in robotics in a number of different ways, and there have been autonomous robots for a long time. And if anyone's got a Roomba at home, you've got an autonomous robot, but it's not an artificial intelligent autonomous robot. So, you know, the long answer is you can achieve autonomy in a number of different ways. The state of the art and what's being developed now relies a lot on artificial intelligence in a number of different ways. So it might be artificial intelligence that's sitting behind the sensor technology in order to make sense of what's going on. But it may also be artificial intelligence that's learning about the environment that the robot's moving around in, and improving its ability to move around in that environment all the time. So as we move to more human-like robots, then the role of artificial intelligence is going to increase dramatically, particularly around natural speech and being able to communicate with a robot just the way that we're communicating right now. That's where it needs to be. I was talking with someone this morning about this very subject, in terms of bringing through robots, even in industrial applications, that you don't need to go on a 2-week training course to be able to operate. You can take it out of the box, switch it on, and start talking to it, asking it to give you information on its status, but more importantly, giving it commands and it getting on and doing the job. That's well within reach right now. Those that are playing with natural language processing will tell you that, you know, recognizing people's speech isn't difficult anymore. Recognizing different accents, different languages, even that is not difficult. The bit that's really being developed in the research labs now is how to have robots work in a mixed environment where there may be a conversation going on that it's not involved in, and how does it recognize that things that it's picking up are not for it, it's for someone else in the room? And also, how does it then contextualize some of the commands that it's being given, so that it's more intelligent in that way? But I think also, as we get to more bipedal humanoid robots, then artificial intelligence plays a big role in what they're going to be doing, particularly in the training of the robots. You know, the ability to have a robot mimic a task that someone else is doing as a quick and easy way for it to learn the task that it's supposed to then carry out repeatedly, will require decent artificial intelligence to be able to do that. And we're seeing that demonstrated by quite a number of the developers of humanoid robots right now.
It's exciting.
What effects do you think the global component supply chain will have on robotics manufacturing and development?
That's a very good question, because I think it can take a number of different forms. A colleague of mine once said that the people who made the money in the gold rush in America were not the miners, they were the spade providers. And I think there's a lot of truth in that. So there are certain key components for robotics going forward, all the way from, you know, decent motors to decent batteries to processing power that's maybe adapted and targeted at robotic applications rather than just general purpose, and some sensing technologies as well. So those kind of components are going to be very important going forward. They're going to be required in massive scale. So those that can produce the world's best of those at the right price are going to do very well for themselves. Where they're produced and who controls that supply is going to be very important, just like in history it's been important for all kinds of different technologies. I remember reading a few years ago about the paraffin wars that happened, and I'm not quite sure when they happened. I think it was 18-somethings, might even have been earlier than that, when paraffin was the most important commodity. And we see it all the time. So I'm not suggesting we're going to have any wars, but what I'm suggesting is that that supply chain is going to be hugely important. However, I think something that is a little bit different now from maybe only a few years ago is a recognition of two elements for the supply chain. One is in terms of the carbon footprint and the net zero ambitions we all have across the globe. That in turn has an impact on where you source your components from. And then there's the importance of making sure that you have a local manufacturing capability if you want to both reduce that carbon footprint but also give yourself some resilience in your supply chain. So I think we may find that with those two things in play, that component supply will be more localized than maybe it has in the past in a truly global economy.
Do you see those new European legislations that regard ethical supply chains playing a factor as well?
Yes, I think so. Yes. I mean, I think that goes for almost anything. So I think, you know, there's a number of things that robotics, as it matures and comes out, becomes a bigger and bigger part of the economy, will just have to fit in with. So that kind of thing, yeah, I think that'll just follow naturally.
And before we wrap things up, are there any trends that you've seen recently in robotics that are exciting that you're personally excited about?
It's all pretty exciting. I think the destination is the most exciting thing. I very often try and help people understand that the future looks like a mixed future of humans and robots coexisting and working side by side. And it's one which brings with it all kinds of benefits, as I mentioned before. But we have to do it responsibly, and we have to think about it before it arrives. So I think the important thing is to wake everyone up to what will inevitably come along. I think we're currently underestimating the impact domestically, and by that I mean in terms of consumer goods and what will happen there. And as more and more robotic-based devices become available to make our lives easier at home, that in turn has the potential to be the biggest market by far. If you look at all the other things that get sold around the world, and could in turn have an impact on traditional markets. I think the introduction of humanoid robots is probably the most exciting and interesting part of what's going to happen over the next few years, as we start to look at a world where, you know, in theory, some of the things that we've automated now might take a step towards the way they used to be when we weren't able to automate and we were using a lot of manpower. We might go to a lot of robot power instead, because it gives a lot of flexibility and has the potential actually to contribute to reducing carbon footprint, etc., by reducing, for example, imagine a large logistics warehouse at the moment that's currently full of lots of dedicated conveyor belts, etc., being replaced by a much smaller space that is full of robots that can move around and do the work instead. Mm-hmm. Those robots, if it's fully robotized, could be working in the dark, might not need as much, if any, heating. But the building itself could be a lot smaller as well. So I think we could see a lot of knock-on impacts as this technology comes along, and that's going to be very exciting. But I think the most exciting bit is not the technology. The most exciting bit is, what does it mean for us humans as we start to use and adopt these robotics devices into our lives?
Yeah, I imagine the society is going to look pretty different one generation from now.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're going to start to see the impact in the next 5 years or so, and definitely in the next 10. And if we were having this conversation in 20 years' time, it would all be done and dusted. I think if we've learned anything over the last few decades, it's the speed of change that comes with these technologies. You know, we've seen new technologies like CD discs come and go within 20 years. Mm-hmm. This kind of technology not only has the ability to come as fast as that, and it won't go, it'll stay. But it also has the ability to make those profound changes. I'm always staggered by when I remind myself that the first smartphone, well, not the first smartphone, but the iPhone, was launched in 2008.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's crazy to think about that.
16 years ago. And I think we all got bored with the upgrades and had all decided that our smartphones were perfectly capable 4 or 5 years ago. So within a decade, we went from first smartphone to saturated smartphone. 10 years. And look at what they can do. And all the things that then grew off the back of that in terms of things like, you know, portable Google Maps and all that kind of stuff, and app stores and a whole economy based around the apps that you can now download on your phone. Robotics is not dissimilar to that, particularly as we introduce humanoid robotics and the way that that can then work alongside and be part of a workforce and be involved in our social life and our home life in a way that will be profoundly transformational.
It's if you look at a graph of technological advancement rates throughout history, it goes pretty steadily like this, but then it reaches a certain point in the last century, it just goes basically straight up. And I think it just keeps escalating steeper and steeper in the last few decades. The rate of advancement is absolutely insane.
Yeah, and I think a number of observers have noted that that's because those technologies have got the software component to them in a way that previous technologies didn't. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot quicker and easier to develop the software capability than it is to develop new hardware. So even if you just look at the rate of, you know, we all know about Moore's Law, etc., but the rate of development in terms of microprocessing and memory capability has been really impressive. But that's nothing compared to how quickly we could develop software.
Yeah.
And I think, again, going back to your point about robots with AI, once we have the robotic platforms that can walk and talk, then it'll be the artificial intelligence that's on board that will be rapidly advancing what we can use those for. Mm-hmm. And that's why I say it's not going to be that different from the iPhone.
Right, for sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on. Before we finish, I just wanted to ask, if anyone wants to check out the organization or contact you about your services, what's the best place to do that?
You can find us on LinkedIn or X, just searching for National Robotarium. We've got a website, again, just go on your favourite search engine and search for National Robotarium and you'll find us. And we've got a YouTube channel as well. Again, just type in National Robotarium and you'll find us there as well. So all those different routes.
Fantastic. Again, yeah, thank you so much. It's been absolutely fascinating. Really great discussion.
Yeah, it's been great.
Good. Great to meet you both. And it's been a pleasure to talk robotics.
Thank you. And for anyone listening at home, just tune in next week. We will have another episode for you.